Well, come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, that ain't no time to wonder why. We're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. I man this war a go-go. There's plenty of good money to be made. Supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just over pray that if they drop the bomb, we're dropping on a Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. We're all gonna die. Now come on, generals, let's move fast. Your big chance is here at last. Now you can go out and get those ribs, cause the only good commie is one that's dead. And you know the chief can only be one when there's one of all the kingdoms come. Sing it! 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for?
Never change. Uncle Sam is still sending our big strong man over to fight. The reasons are still more related to greed than to any altruistic notions of saving the world. Anybody tries to tell you different, they're lying to you. Most of them lying to themselves, too. In a way that makes it excusable, but it isn't. We can't let them keep on lying to themselves and us. We can't let them look the other way. We can't let them pretend there's nothing wrong, because there's plenty wrong. That's why Mike and I keep coming back week after week to talk about it on the New American Dream radio show. We're glad to average, about 800 downloads every week. This show, because that tells us you're really out there. There's really somebody listening to our show, and we love that. It's the reason we keep on finding great people to talk to. It's the reason we look for news you might not be able to hear elsewhere. And it's the reason we shamelessly and repeatedly share our opinions with you. And we need your help. Got a fundraising campaign going. We're trying to raise $1,500, and it's been going on for a week and a half, and so far we have $100 to show. Now, I'm not going to threaten to quit or anything, because we love this show too much. We're going to find a way to make it happen, even if you guys, you know, stiff us or whatever, even if we have to pay for the whole thing ourselves. But you know, we really could use some help. You know, we don't make a lot of money on anything else, and we don't make anything on this. So please, If you haven't pitched in yet, go to our show site, theshow.newamericandream.info. Take a look over in the left column for the fundraiser link. Follow it to Indiegogo and kick in a few bucks. Or you can go directly to the Indiegogo campaign. That's at indiegogo.com/projects/307282. And every donation counts. There's some perks if you put in $20, a little more if you put in $100. But if you just put in one or two, just knowing you're out there, that really makes a difference to us. We need to know that you want us to keep on coming back. I mean, we're going to do it anyway, but we really like to know that you're out there and you want us to come back. So, you know, speaking of campaigns, what do you think about Obama getting on the TV in the middle of the Price is Right and trying to get the housewives on his side and the gun control issue? Seems to me it was kind of poor planning. I don't think it's a very good time for the press to be selling stuff. I know my wife would much rather buy something from Drew Carey. Of course, Drew can't pitch a hissy fit and send a drone out after us, so Obama man has a little more leverage, I mean. Yeah. You know, I'm just as sick of gun violence as anybody. But I don't think handing all the guns in to the goons in charge is the best choice. The reason our founding fathers wanted to keep their guns is they thought they might need them to overthrow another government. It wasn't so much to defend themselves against wandering homeless types. Really wasn't so much to help defend the country against invaders. Those revolutionary folks were very aware of dangers that came from within. They wanted to keep their guns as a means of defense against corruption. The police, the soldiers, and the politicians, those were the ones they were worried about. I'm not in favor of these gun control measures. Mind you, I'm no fan of guns. I'm no fan of having the bad guys be the only ones that have them either. I don't think that makes any sense at all. What I really want, with all my heart, was what I really want is for us all to get along. I want us to stop trying, us, the USA, to stop trying to dominate the world, stop trying to be the policeman for everyone. I want us, the people, all of us, to find a new and better way. So let me play for you now what Bill Hicks has to say about finding a better ride.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money, a choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever. In peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
I'm Chuck Gregory. I welcome you to the New American Dream radio show. I'm going to turn it over now to my friend and co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guests Tom Stirner and Anthony Rayson. Both have been on the show a few times. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Arvada, Colorado, Chicago, Duluth, and wherever you are. I'd like to recommend this article. It's by Andrew McGregor and Jim Fetzer. You find it at Veterans Today. It's called How the Sandy Hook Massacre Went Down. And also on Veterans Today, Zero Dark 30, The Latest in Obama Propaganda. Go to Veterans Today for that. And also Veterans Today, Sandy Hook Analogies with the London 7-7 Bombings. A couple more here, just quick. If you Google this, U.S. Navy SEAL commander who killed Osama bin Laden commits apparent suicide in Afghanistan. And the last of the articles I want to recommend is Killers of Osama Dying or Being Killed. I'd also like to recommend these two films, A Noble Lie. You would, I think that's by Free Mind Films. It's a group in Oklahoma, A Noble Lie. And the second film is Wellstone, They Killed Him, and that's by Snowshoe Films. And you can Google either one of those to find information how to order to see it, maybe see it on YouTube. Okay, it's again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American-Russian novel All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There is no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who have brought about this long 10-year and more war and debacle to trial and put on TV, just like OJ, every afternoon, so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rice, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they all know that, and yet they refuse to acknowledge what they know. They kill and continue to kill. They allow others to die for a lie. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. Our country is surely broken as well. We need a truth commission. We need to put certain people on the stand, and we need to be allowed to ask questions. The troops are not protecting us. That is someone's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising jingle, someone else's sermon. Troops serve the empire. They are not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire, those who sneaked into the nuclear weapons facility in Tennessee, for one example. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He is complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election, and see, there is a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. It went all the way in that hole, and no, there's no blood and no bodies and no luggage scattered or plane parts, and Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Remember the anthrax letters which said, "Are you afraid?" Those were not written with a rock and chisel like Fred Flintstone from the recesses of some cave in Afghanistan. Those letters came from persons within our own government, like a horror movie, and the killer is in the same house with us. These killers are right here with us, and they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid. Back to you, Chuck.
The Adventures of Fighting Father Jack Duffy, war priest of West Omaha. He got his name from having told the guys in seminary up in St. Paul that he used to box in South O, so he'd be known as a regular guy. And then, because when he got ordained, the bishop even said, Fighting Father Jack Duffy, when he put the holy oils on his head. Well, a few years later, the Air Force asked him to come out to office and bless the new chapel with a stained glass window depicting the airman running for his bomber with a mushroom cloud in the background. The word, send me, Lord. They made him an honorary airman, gave him stickers for his car bumper sticker, for his gold chalice. And Father Jack is now the senior priest, the pastor at St. Ronnie's, since Bill Kropp retired. Well, last Sunday was another special war day. Some sort of day to honor the military, and Fighting Father Jack Duffy, war priest of West Omaha, had on his camo robes with his Air Force ball cap. He was hurrying all around to get ready in the sacristy, helping the altar boys get their camo surplices over their heads. Then he had to dash out into the church to make sure the choir wore camo, and the ushers had the Air Force, Marines, Navy, and Army ball caps to pass out to everybody at the door. Big Joseph and Mary statues on both sides of the altar wore banners across their chests like beauty pageant contestants. It said, freedom isn't free. Regular United States flag on the altar had been supersized and was stretched across the whole back wall. Soldiers recently returned from Afghanistan would do the readings. And as an ordained minister of the gospel, Father Jack has taken the liberty of asking a returning soldier, also a Eucharistic minister who takes communion to people in nursing homes, to rewrite the gospel of Luke to fit the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That returning soldier, the parish Eucharistic minister, is Bob. And Bob was in Fallujah back in the early days of the war. He took on Father Duffy's request to rewrite the Gospel of Luke. He called it the Gospel according to Fallujah.
When it came time for the Gospel, Bob stood when Father Jack Duffy nodded to him and walked to the podium. From his back pocket, Bob drew out the paper, spread it on the lectern, and began to read. It was a hotbed of insurgency. It was Operation Phantom Fury. It was the smell that first hit me, a smell that is difficult to describe and one that will never leave me. It was the smell of death. Hundreds of corpses were decomposing in the houses, gardens, and streets of Fallujah. Bodies were rotting where they had fallen, bodies of men, women, and children, many half-eaten by wild dogs. A wave of hate had wiped out two-thirds of the town, destroying houses and mosques, schools and clinics. This was the terrible and frightening power of the U.S. military assault. The accounts I heard over the next few days will live with me forever. You may think you know what happened in Fallujah, but the truth is worse than you could possibly have imagined.
In one of the makeshift refugee camps that surround Fallujah, we found a 17-year-old woman. I'm from the Jolan district, she told me. Five of us, including a 55-year-old neighbor, were trapped together in our house when the siege began. American Marines came to our house. My father and the neighbor went to the door to meet them. We were not fighters. We thought we had nothing to fear. I ran into the kitchen to put on my veil since men were going to enter the house. It would be wrong for them to see me with my hair uncovered. It saved my life. As my father and neighbor approached the door, the Americans opened fire on them. They died instantly. Me and my 13-year-old brother hid in the kitchen behind the fridge. The soldiers came into the house and caught my older sister. They beat her, then they shot her, but they did not see me. Soon they left, but not before they destroyed our furniture, stole the money from my father's pocket. Hadda told me how she comforted her dying sister by reading verses from the Quran. After 4 hours, her sister died. For 3 days, Hadda and her brother stayed with their murdered relatives, but they were thirsty. They had only a few dates to eat. They feared the troops would return and decided to try to flee the city, but they were spotted by a U.S. sniper. Hadda was shot in the leg. Her brother ran, but was shot in the back and died instantly. Someone named Ayad told me the survivors of another family from the Jolan district said that at the end of the second week of the siege, the U.S. troops swept through the Jolan.
Iraqi National Guard used loudspeakers to call on people to get out of the houses carrying white flags, bringing all their belongings with them. They were ordered to gather outside near the mosque in the center of town. 8 members of one family, one of them a 6-month-old child, gathered their belongings and walked in single file as instructed to the mosque. When they reached the main road outside the mosque, they heard a shout, but they could not understand what was being shouted. Ayad told me it could have been "now" in English.
Then the firing began. U.S. soldiers appeared on the roofs of surrounding houses. They opened fire. Ayad's father was shot in the heart, his mother in the chest. They died instantly. 2 of Ayad's brothers were also hit, one in the chest and one in the neck. 2 of the women were hit, one in the hand, one in the leg. Then the snipers killed the wife of one of Ayad's brothers. When she fell, her 5-year-old son ran to her and stood over her body, so they shot him dead too. Survivors made desperate appeals to the troops to stop firing, but Ayad told me that whenever one of them tried to raise a white flag, they were shot. After several hours, he tried to raise his arm with the flag, but they shot him in the arm. They shot him in the hand. The 5 survivors, including the 6-month-old child, lay in the street for 7 hours. Then 4 of them crawled to the nearest home to find shelter. The next morning, the brother who was shot in the neck also managed to crawl to safety.
They all stayed in the house for 8 days, surviving on roots and 1 cup of water, which they saved for the baby. On the 8th day, they were discovered by some members of the Iraqi National Guard and taken to a hospital in Fallujah. They heard the Americans were arresting any young men, so the family fled the hospital and finally obtained treatment in a nearby town. They do not know in detail what happened to the other families who had gone to the mosque as instructed, but they told me the street was awash with blood.
We heard the accounts of families killed in their houses, of wounded people dragged into the streets and run over by tanks, of a container with the bodies of 481 civilians inside, of premeditated murder, looting, acts of savagery and cruelty that beggar belief. I remember being approached by an elderly woman, her eyes raw with tears. She grabbed my arm, told me how her house had been hit by a U.S. bomb during an air raid. The ceiling collapsed on her 19-year-old son, cutting off both legs. She could not get help. She could not go into the streets because the Americans had posted snipers on the roofs and were killing anyone who ventured out, even at night. She tried her best to stop the bleeding, but it was to no avail. She stayed with him, her only son, until he died. He took 4 hours to die.
Fallujah's main hospital was seized by the U.S. troops in the first days of the siege. The only other clinic was hit twice by U.S. missiles. Its medicines and medical equipment were all destroyed. There were no ambulances. The 2 ambulances that came to help the wounded were shot up and destroyed by U.S. troops. We visited houses in the Jolan district, a poor working-class area in the northwestern part of the city. that had been the center of resistance during the April siege. This quarter seemed to have been singled out for punishment during the second siege. We moved from house to house, discovering families dead in their beds or cut down in living rooms or in the kitchen. House after house had furniture smashed and possessions scattered.
In some places, we found bodies of fighters dressed in black and with ammunition belts. But in most of the houses, the bodies were all civilians. Many were dressed in house coats. Many of the women were not veiled, meaning there were no men other than family members in the house. There were no weapons, no spent cartridges. It became clear to us we were witnessing the aftermath of a massacre, the cold-blooded butchery of helpless and defenseless civilians. Nobody knows how many died. The occupation forces are now bulldozing the neighborhoods to cover up their crime. What happened in Fallujah was an act of barbarity. The whole world must be told the truth. This is the gospel of the Lord, Bob said. Thanks be to God, repeated the congregation. Bob lowered his head and stumbled to his seat and began to sob. Fighting Father Jack Duffy, war priest of West Omaha, bounded down from his padded chair up on the altar, stood in front of the congregation, raised his hand, smiled, and shouted, "Freedom isn't free." Please turn in your hymn books to the Star Spangled Banner and stand with me as we honor America. And I'll ask the ushers, please take up the collection.
This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. Did we go to the moon? Maybe, maybe not. But just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it is one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop! See, like that. You can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You are sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin. Disapparated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof, poof. No one can now see you or talk to you. You are a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into World War II? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Are so-called terror plots and mass murders such as in Aurora, Colorado, Newtown, Connecticut, and dozens of other terrorist events actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What the fuck are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the Robert F. Kennedy shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he did not do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do those questions have merit or are they preposterous? We will never know because Brian Williams and NBC and Amy Gooden and NPR are afraid of even asking the question. Why? Did Bush steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Ask those questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper or radio show and you will get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart. They will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you are truly so hilariously pathetic, or is it because they are so afraid? The Foundation for a New American Dream, because it's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire.
Our first guest tonight, Tom Stirner, is a writer. He lives in Arvada, Colorado. He's been published in magazines and on the internet. And he goes by the internet pseudonym Word Wolf. He writes lyrics, sings, composes music with his sons. He's won many awards, published a couple of novels, and we welcome him back to our show. Hello, Tom.
Hi there. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, since we're running a little late, I'm going to let you. I'm going to turn you loose right now, and I know you brought some vignettes to read to us.
Yep, I'm ready to go. If you want to see any of my work, go to WordWolf, WordWulf.com. This is my heaven. My heaven is escape me. My heaven is escape me. My heaven is escape me, brother. My heaven is a woman. My heaven is a suckling child. Another man's shame, another man's glory, yeah. My heaven, he been gone for a while. Ah, what I wouldn't give to wake up of a morning, go into that kitchen, sit down in an old chair and see her looking at me across the table, a cup of coffee in her hand, cat in her lap, yeah, looking at me, from eyes that only knew how to love me and care for me, the summer ghost and her ghostling. Too much slips away from us in the everydays of our lives. We move through them unaware until one day they are ghosts haunting the half-life of those we have left. They exist at impossible angles to the sham realities we have created, a thin riot of shadows adrift behind our dreams, ghosts of indescribable sorrow. A penny in my pocket and this old torn-up shirt, my mind didn't amount to much. And too damned late to understand what you tried so hard to teach me, that folks will never leave you alone, just let you be what you be. The fight does leak out of you as the insecure and cocksure young rip at your foundations, make light of the ghost you are becoming. I am a sadder man without you, Mama. How the hell would I ever find what I took for granted in your eyes anywhere else? Finally, I forgive you for giving up the ghost and hope you know how difficult it was for me to just leave you alone, to seek your peace, be what you be. I greet myself every morning with the high sun of your voice. The ghost of winter enters my heart. Only in death will you know who I am. Why I came when I came, will you know who I am? Only in death will you know who I am. Why I came when I came, will you know who I am? Cat's eyes stare from under cars. I used to shoot them when I was a boy. Rounds of four-hole and poison when you reached it. Five-pot in the middle. I remember circles drawn with crooked sticks in fresh summer dirt. Steelies and Aggies, hot sun and glass orbs, ball bearings far from the wound of their greased sleeves. Pockets worn into holes, bare feet and stone bruises wrestling in the housing projects with brown children beaten for a dime. Proud as a piss ant and twice as hungry. Cat's eyes tied into knots in a bag, cobwebs, a box of old shoes, spider bones, and ashes. Pray excuse my edge, dismiss me out of hand, angry man, on a bar stool, on a toilet, opening a hymnal, singing his praises, false security, protection of religion, of dependence, of sanctions, in a cage, in a urinal, in a pocket. Rage expends itself. It's a currency of monsters. Is a spittle puke. Is blood dripping from the ceiling. Did someone die in here? Blood splatter and perfume. Red blots on the page. Bookmark. Wait. You missed the part where I enter. Front stage center. Left horse black. No. He crossed the room, spilled his guts, fell over the porch rail, drowned on his own blood gorge, on the sidewalk, Federal Boulevard, in front of the bar, in public, on the wrong side of night. Well, he fucked up the bathroom. Who's going to clean up this mess? Cops don't care. They are 10 men in this city, citizen protectors in a protracted environment, paid guests at the door, at the table, at the gimme, more blood feast. I want to know if he finished the book before he mauled the princess, robbed the beggar, refused to acknowledge and show respect for the band. That piece of meat on the sidewalk, it belongs there. It exemplifies, it horrifies, glorifies the city fathers. I want to go home, take the Cherokee princess with me, make her safe, return her to the sultanate of the people, Mr. Detective, politician. I am unable to learn your lies, much less believe them. The good man, the angry man, tucked his long knife into the cigarette machine. I put the princess on a bus. Destination, the raped and looted spiritual ground of our Cherokee fathers, nails rusting in the bodies of our friends, the trees, where our ancestors' children were crucified, skinned alive, skins worth more to the white machine than the hides of Brother Buffalo. Angry man in a room, on a chair, beneath the glaring false light, staring into the eyes of his inquisitors, moved past hate and moved beyond sorrow, underwater, drifting, floating between life and the undeath, hanging on, very little left, right horse white, angry man on the bar stool, in a cage, on a toilet, rage. What on earth are they doing? She wonders at some clatter of arms. The sky, a thunder forgotten, a new wind, some vile man-made thing, and plucking birds from the air. Aftermath, season of dread, fear of retaliation, children gone running in circles, this war they name religion. What gods have they known who make such a thing holy? She smells a burning of ribbon. Ah, they'd come set fire to my hair. Some wield a mighty hammer of tongue, others lie by the sword. It doesn't really matter to those of us on the ground, whom death would choose it takes. Love and happiness, it is money. Power and control, it is money. Gas, car, back, seat, hump, it is money. Color of skin, it is money. Blind eyes, face of God, it is money. Child, wipe your eyes on my sleeve. Turn your head away, away. They are raining us down. Ah, damn, they come set fire to your hair. When he was 15 years old, he left home, got himself a kitten. Couldn't afford to feed it, stole milk from porch boxes. That's how he ended up in jail the first time and bailed out to the prison of his mother's monster. Having spent some time with them, I'm acutely aware that real time doesn't exist for madmen. Having been very damned close to becoming one myself, I wonder, if death won't own them, where the hell do they go? There are signs, always, dates and chance meetings. Would be, I could come to know them, import their instances of minute wisdom and joy, convey them some way in waves to my children. I caught myself singing and praying mantis listening, thankful that gods have a sense of humor and insects, no predisposition to what is cool, this old man singing. There is death in the music of the fool. 14 degrees left of bright when the moon howls his name, caught in horizontal union with creatures better than himself. He laughs himself to sleep, wakes up in a fit of tears, damns the night to find him. Dogs scratching on the window, cats needing more than they give, goldfish floating, gasp of bowl, ferrets and hamsters desperate to escape or simply die of their own captured condition. Humans kept as pets empirical. I believe Sunday afternoon, its guarantee of death, of light, of savior, of the sun never going down, the moon never rising. We are fools, sycophants of preconceived conditions. The child who goes to bed hungry knows what to expect of morning, that the pain is deeper, yet easier to abide, learns a sense of owning, having starved in the prayer, desert of hope, God of blame. Take me to the pasture lowing, of baser animals moo, with a beer in my belly, a television in my face, professional sports, statistics, false idols, and jock straps. Teach me to close my eyes. There is always a new music, sexuality, duality, a reason to abandon the hearts of our homes, a sense of giving over a certain death to old singers in the breath of new cock. A man might identify himself in the mirror and ignore the necessity of the bullet in his brain, marked in the cylinder of his gun with the initials of his name, in the holster, in the schism of life. You see the dog once in, she's scratching at the door. You see the dog once out, she's scratching at the door. It's the ooze, the spilled pasta, the slave, human, owns her, cleans her shit from the floor. There is no cynicism starker than reality, and no realism comparable to visions of the cynic engaged in a life of chaos, aware that we all fall down. The sun goes falling summer, half-light on the wooden gate. We are divided by structures, abstract deviations, naked initiations dissolve, reappear, and present themselves as masquerades of autumn. Air conditioning and traffic, lamentations of the damned to be outside looking in, cardboard signs and weeping sailors on the tarmac. Gimme, gimme, I'm homeless, gimme, a dollar and ore, circles and dimes. The singer stayed outside in a leach field of stone, learned to be one with the excrement, the leavings of those inside, once vented the best part of themselves, worthy of her serenade, a funereal display of parting. Mama was bleeding that morning, Daddy drunk as a snake, wallowing in a river of whiskey. The new boy awoke and awash, began humming, escaping, going to that never place where no one would find him, ever. Children,
Tom,
do you
we're
hear
gonna have to stop.
The death chord, the life, underneath the television, there in the center of your brain, that the headphones can't reach and the preachers don't teach, the you, the only, the you? Already
Tom,
I was
thank you.
Dreaming before
we,
I
we have to
sleep.
Stop there.
Did you hear the laughing child enjoy its meandering spirit, the innocence of its wander, the free and comforting tones of its voice emanating from that source?
That was Tom Stirner. You can find him at wordwolf.com. We thank him very much. And that's some great stuff he was reading, and I hated to have to interrupt. And now stay tuned for the continuing adventures of Troy the Town Cop. Troy was sitting in the cruiser brushing donut hole dust off his new blue pants. He was over on the side street, over by the ball field, listening to the high school Saturday afternoon basketball report on the local radio station when he got a call. Something about an explosion over by the church on Elm Street. Troy turned on the siren and the lights, and it wasn't long before he could see the smoke. Lots and lots of smoke. Black smoke rising straight up. There were cars burning in the parking lot and a big hole in the church roof where the smoke and fire danced. Troy ran inside, beginning his full day of helping to save the living, cover the dead, and comfort the dying amid the brick and steel and wood church rubble. The wedding was canceled. The bride and groom and most of the wedding party were among the casualties. The guest eventually went home, walking, limping, or hobbling along in vehicles with flat tires and blown out windows. It was Troy who discovered the remains of one of the rockets that some said had come from a silent, pilotless aircraft above our town. Troy rubbed away the blood and dirt to find an inscription on the spent bomb. Greetings from the USA and Barack Obama. When Troy finally got home, he was too tired to shower. He yanked a beer from the fridge, snatched a bowl of stale chips off the counter, stumbled in the living room. He felt in the dark for the clicker and turned on the news, right in time for coverage of the whole church thing. And there he was, hurrying around, jumping over a little broken stone wall. He pointed the beer can at the TV and sort of smiled as he kicked off his boots at the same time. TV announcers explained for their listeners that the members of the wedding party had been terrorists, a sleeper hidden cell. Bride and groom had been known to do anti-American terroristic things. One of them was the number two person in the organization. This will deeply inhibit their ability to operate for quite some time, said the TV announcer. Troy popped the top, looked at the clock on the wall, pointed the clicker, and switched to the college basketball game. Join us next time for the adventures of Troy the Town Cop, where we'll find Troy being called to a high school kegger in the woods and finding only a crashed 69 Chevrolet Lunar Lander and a lonely alien sitting on a stump singing, I am a lineman for the county, and drinking Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill.
Our second guest is Anthony Rayson. Anthony lives in Chicago. He's an American anarchist, activist, and author. He runs the South Chicago ABC Zine Distro and publishes many zines and pamphlets. DePaul University holds a special collection of Anthony Rayson's work. Hello, Anthony. How are you tonight?
Very good, thanks.
As we discussed, Anthony is going to be with us for a series for a few months in a row here. And Anthony, if you would just take it away and do your thing.
Okay. Well, I've had a real amazing 2-3 weeks. I retired from my job December 31st after 38 miserable years, and 2 days ago, our son's wife had a baby. So we're grandparents. So it's pretty awesome. I was going to read a little piece. I did a presentation last month at the College of Complexes, the playground for people who think. And my presentation was about the work I do, free school education. And what I do, I made a zine out of it. And so I wrote an introduction to the zine, and there's like 30 contributions from prisoners explaining why they're so important to them. So I'm going to read a little bit of my introduction and then maybe a piece by one of the prisoners. I titled this Free School Education, Each One Teach One, Humanizing Education in the Age of High-Tech Alienation, Mass Incarceration, and Endless Wars, Overcoming Program Ignorance, Self-Hate, Addictions, etc., and Unlocking One's Innate Purpose, Developing a strong resolve, using talents and interests to help others actualize themselves, using the medium of zines in collaboration with conscious prisoner artists and writers in solidarity with the oppressed and those genuinely working on their behalf. I'm sort of a student of the great free school educators of the past, and I talk about a few of them, too, at the end of this zine, people like Leo Tolstoy and Paulo Freire, who wrote Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and also Francisco Ferrer, who's the great free school educator of Spain before he was executed by the Spanish government. Anyway, here's my introduction, or at least half of it. I know we're sort of pressed for time tonight. It's called Why Am I Doing This? I consider myself a serious anarchist as well as a writer, so I've endeavored to develop myself as an effective polemicist. As well, I am looking to collaborate with like-minded individuals, as well as people most likely to take my work seriously and join in developing conscious opposition to this oppressive government and all coercive sources of power. As Michelle Alexander has so eloquently pointed out to us, human slavery to this day remains the linchpin of the U.S. Constitution. In other words, the whole legal foundation of laws in this country has to do with the fact that the government takes the right to treat at least certain segments of the population as human chattel. So the prisons, to me, represented ground zero in the struggle for liberation here at home. Once I decided to focus my attention on the gulags, it quickly became obvious that as constitutional slaves, according to the 13th Amendment, they were being tortured, oppressed, and demonized in many ways to keep them fragmented, uneducated, at each other's throats, and it's a stark warning to us on the outs of what can happen if we don't swallow the BS Kool-Aid. The prisons are a microcosm of life outside this concertina wire. All the problems of abuse, violence, alienation, despair, suffering, etc., are magnified in prison, and the oppression is a very real 24-hour day, 7 days a week nightmare for many, many people. It soon became obvious that the so-called worst of the worst were often actually the best and the brightest. Here were the brilliant thinkers I was looking forward to collaborate with and learn from. Alas, they were treated like monsters in clinical torture chambers for having the courage and insight to say what was happening to their comrades, and most tellingly, why. Many others have been herded into the prisons like cows shoved into pens awaiting their cruel deaths and exploitation. They needed to be told the brutal truth. At first, I was just feeling my way around. I didn't know I would spearhead such a vast prison-focused scene distro. I learned as I went along, but I did know that genuine education, which I had striven to attain for myself from a young age, was what everybody else also needed to help develop themselves to their potentials. I felt like everybody else for a long time, frustrated, alienated, and disconnected to any real body of resistance. The government had managed to atomize me too, even though I had never bought into any of it. It took a real epiphany for me to develop the resolve I would need to push this project forward and several others I've been involved with that was provided to me by brilliant teachers. There was real opposition to this dreadful government. There was succinct analysis out there that continuously exposed the lies of government and developed humanitarian forms of social conduct. This is what I thought I could become a part of. I could develop my talents and interests, create a fulfilling life for myself, collaborate with the best, and help many otherwise forgotten prisoners along the way. And I would do it with the thing I love to do most, write, craft, transcribe, edit, compile, reprint, publish, or otherwise make available distro mind-blowing zines. Since the gulags demanded that the publications be mailed directly from the publisher, why, I would make myself a publisher. But these publications would not be coming from a warehouse churning out Bibles or religious texts. They wouldn't have the barcodes, price tags, or copyright threats either. They would be completely anti-copyright, and brothers and sisters would be encouraged to reprint anything and everything they saw fit to. It was and is a concrete example of what can be. These are pamphlets of life and love and resistance. It would open up a world of genuinely free education and a spirit of real solidarity and mutual aid. Here were anarchists stepping forward and getting real with the issues of concern that prisoners in particular can totally relate to, often written by the brilliant poets, essayists, jailhouse lawyers, and incredible artists that pepper every single gulag in this vast archipelago. I'd make it happen. Well, that's half of my intro. I wanted to sneak in a prisoner contribution or two, if I could, that is part of this publication. Usually when I have a presentation, I hit the prisoners and tell them, you know, this is what I'm going to do, write something or draw something or contribute some way or another. So, and I wanted to make this a really focus on what the prisoners had to say about all this work, because they're the ones who really know about it and get into it heavily. So this one's called Zine Machine, by Coyote, who runs the Anarchist Black Cross Nevada Prison Chapter. He's a prolific, brilliant writer in his own right. In this unwavering struggle called life, as we reside amongst the imprisoned and the confined in a suffocating world where darkness permeates our lives perpetually, as the lights get turned out in our minds long before they get turned out in ourselves, as we become turned out to a degenerate culture of death and stagnation. It is the hungry one, the thirsty one, the strong, the rebellious, the brave one who seeks to pick up a zine and learn new knowledge that can and will change and save their lives, while the other prisoners around them continue to absentmindedly tread down the zombied-out path of conformity and confusion. Zines have the power and ability to transcend a prisoner's mind beyond the depths of the dark pits they reside in, taking our minds to greater heights than was described in the Flight of Icarus, beyond the sun, where a brave, bright new world lies, a world of self-sufficiency and autonomy, where the trees are the greenest you've ever seen and the seas the bluest. Many a prisoner has stumbled and fallen, tripped over their own confusion and ignorance, and haven't been able to prop themselves back up again. but put a zine in a prisoner's hands and watch and see how all their aspirations and ambitions come alive. Put a zine in a prisoner's hands and open their hearts to a new world of freedom. Open their minds to the courageous and beautiful idea of resistance and revolt, and watch how easily the chains begin to slip and fall off. Once we have been awakened to the truth, we have no more excuses, and no more can we continue to aimlessly dwell in a world of robots. Our brains become reactivated and alive again as we begin to reconnect with our own humanity, seeing that there are other people going through the same things we've gone through and are still going through, and as we see how they are taking action and taking steps to take control over their own lives, we begin to realize that they are awake. They are alive, and when we read their zines and become invigorated and inspired by the realness and the depth of their words, well, the reality becomes our reality, and we realize that by all means we can do and be the same. A bridge is built, then crossed, and the rest is history. This is the real power of zines. In the dark confines of these gulags, nothing can be more powerful, more galvanizing than the radical and revolutionary truths that have been printed on the pages of these prisoner zines. If you don't believe me, all you have to do is read Treyway's Deliberately I Defy zine, or Russell Maroon Schultz's Black Fighting Formation zine, or Herbace Lamar's Resist, Rebel, Defy zine, or all three of Sean Swain and Travis Washington's Last Act of the Circus Animal zine, or the Papyrus Collective's Write or Die zine, or Anthony Rayson's Brutal Truth zine, or my Throne to the Wolves zine, and you'll see what I mean. We are only but a few of the zinesters churning out these zines like a zine machine, and we are here to free your mind as we bring new culture, new thought, and a new world of revolution to your cell. We are the zinesters, the liberators. We are the ones who pour our hearts out on these pages. These words aren't just written with ink, but with the blood of our own hearts, mixed with the tears from our eyes as we shed them for the oppressed captives in this world. That's how we make our ink in these gulags, with our blood, our sweat, and our tears. We have even gone as far as ripping out our hearts and placing them in these zines just for you. We are the reason you have become conscious, and you are the reason we keep putting these zines out as we try to make the next one better than the last one. This has become a part of our culture, our life, our world. While other prisoners concentrate on the mind-numbing TV shows that are coming on tonight, or who they're going to get their next shot of coffee from, or while they're selling all their food to buy a freak book to look at, we are in ourselves producing, manifesting, and creating revolution. This has become an integral part of our lives, and once you read our zines, it'll become an integral part of yours. The more zines you read, the more enlightened you become, and the more enlightened you become, the more you resist the everyday stagnation and ignorance around you. The more you resist, the stronger you become, and with that newly acquired strength, it is only natural that you seek and strive to liberate yourself. Through the last zine of mine, you've already learned that stagnation is death. Now pick up another one of my zines and learn how to bring death to stagnation. Rebellion, Coyote. Here's another little piece. If I have a little time left, I don't know.
Anthony, we've got about 2 minutes with it. Can you do it in 2 minutes?
Yeah, this is a short one. It's called Blown Smoke. Her watery words were larded with lies. The cold and calculated diffidence in her persona was to fool only fools, but never the wise. We've been down that well-trodden road many times before, enough times to know when smoke is being blown. The things that at first glance seem alluring can oftentimes be quite dreadful upon closer examination. Though she may be unduly revered by the unseeing and the unknowing, she has become abominated by those who have already felt the ice-cold tactility of her suffocating embrace. One slight glance upon her uncaring, opaque eyes would be a definite result in one's untimely demise. High and mightily, she sits on a peremptory throne, looking down on her civilized society with a subtle hint of unhinged brutality. More's the pity for those who do not obey, I'd say. They'd be lucky to be thrown into a prison, never again to see another sunshiny day. Dishonest, dishonorable, despicable, manipulative, cruel, and vindictive. Conniving, condescending, and carnivorous, is she? What is her name, you ask? Well, surely, my friend, you've heard of her before. Her name is Authority. Well, that's about it for tonight, folks.
Anthony, that's a great intro to what you're about and what we'll be talking about over the next few months. And I think that's very cool. And congrats on being out of a job. You're finally
free.
Yeah,
I'm just reveling in being in the ranks of the unemployed. It's fantastic. I can finally have a little time and not have this monkey on my back, having to worry about going to work all the time.
Can you tell the folks what your job was for how many years? 30
well,
years?
Well, I was working at a toll booth at I-80, a busy toll booth.
30 how many years?
38 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you're free.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for doing that, and I'm really looking forward to this. I'm sure everybody is looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can introduce more individual writers and give you a better idea of what this is all about and how it permeates the whole struggle in this country and around the world even.
And what you do is you have your zine and you publish. You're in contact with prisoners in various prisons around the country, and you'll be able to bring them to us each month. Some of their selections.
Well, their work.
Correct?
I can't. You know, they're not allowed to go on a computer or a phone call or hardly ever or whatever. But yeah, we can use their words, their thoughts, and their artwork too is just stunning.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you very much, yeah. Anthony. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks. Bye bye.
Yep. Bye.
Occupy Dealey Plaza, to where it all began. November 22nd, 1963, right around 12:30 p.m., 50 years ago this year on November 22nd, 2013. Bill Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking. Let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers, their sniper rifles and double secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope. And real change.
Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America. This message is from Harper, Random, Collins, Bantam, Simon, Penguin, and Schuster, America's book publisher. You've heard of the Harry Potter series. Well, that author has retired, and that's left a big gap on the Walmart bookshelf. And we are pleased to announce the Killing Ben series by the Navy SEALs who did or will do the killing. We think you'll love the tales of terror, adventure, and terror. We think you will eat up Killing Ben Cohen and Killing Ben Affleck. There will be low-light bar scenes, fast fingers finding passwords on really cool computers, Tom Cruise running fast, Killing Ben Roethlisberger, Killing Ben Franklin, Killing Ben Stiller. There will be car chases and people jumping out of fast pickups on country back roads with country music playing. Animated jumping over mooses and squirrels. Killing Big Ben, Killing Ben Bernanke, Killing Ben Hogan. There will be books and movies and coffee mugs, t-shirts and tiny toys. Killing Ben Stein, Ben Kingsley, and Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Harrison, Benny Goodman, Ben Gazzara, and Uncle Ben's Rice. Look for the Killing Ben series in your Walmart aisle soon. How it was done by the Navy SEALs who were there or will be there soon, in on the action, right up close. It's true. There will be t-shirts. Killing Bo Peep, Killing Quasimodo, Killing Cruella, and Captain Hook.
Do we believe what we believe because we've studied, held them in our hands, rolled them around, and decided? Or was it because we heard it on the TV from some person being paid or commanded to deliver the message? It's been a long road. From a stolen election to a government planned attack on September 11, 2001, to two invasions based on lies, based on power, based on money. To a murdered senator, the one standing in their way, would not be moved. We didn't want it to come. We marched, we emailed, we sang, we wrote, we got arrested. But it came anyway. And it's still here. The new American dream is a yellow ribbon free zone. We do not support the troops. The troops are not defending our freedom. They are thugs for the empire. We heard all about putting a boot up their ass from Toby Keith. Well, he's a brave man to encourage other men to kill men, women, and children for no reason. The real patriots were the Dixie Chicks. We all know that now. Protesters protect our freedom. And that's the truth. Think Cynthia McKinney, Cindy Sheehan, not George Bush and John McCain. A hero does not drop bombs on people who are trying to live their lives. Come on. Teachers, priests, ministers, coaches, parents, please start telling the truth. We can handle the truth. In fact, without the truth, we cannot live. We will die slowly. And then all at once, we'll collapse. That will be that, and it will be over. A dusty pile of rubble and ho-hos and lies. We need a new dream, something real, solid, to believe in. Truth in our history books. Bread on the table of the poor. We have many heroes from which to draw inspiration. People who gave and are giving their lives to the truth. Patriots, if you will. Warriors, hard workers. I don't care what you call them. They're there. They've always been there, even if we don't see them. Even if they're not famous, they don't give a damn about that. They're driven by something inside. We can draw hope from the absolute fact that same thing is also inside of us. People like Franz Jagersdatter, Sophie Scholl, Philip Berrigan, Daniel Berrigan, Dorothy Day, Frank Cordero, Deborah Sweet, Carl Kabat, Helen Woodson, Sister Helen Rice, Sam Smith, Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett. This message brought to you by the good folks at World News Trust, the Spiritual UN, author James Boomey, the Rock Creek Free Press, those individuals who have contributed over the past several months, 23 months, so we can bring you the New American Dream Radio Show. If you'd like to become an advertiser or supporter, you can contact us directly. Contact me, CWGCWGServices.com, or join in our fundraiser at Indiegogo. Visit our website, theshow.newamericandream.info, and you'll see a link to get to Indiegogo on the left-hand side where you can donate anything from a dollar or two to several hundred. Hey, that'd be nice. Not expecting. Thanks also go out to the many guests who have taken the time to visit with us over these months. And all of you, we thank you so much for listening.
Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Father Ralph is pastor of Good God, What Is It Good For? Catholic Parish in Mount Liberty. It's his home. He grew up in this town. GGWGF was his first assignment out of St. Paul's Seminary, and after he had his runaround of assignments over the course of the next 40 years, Randolph, Broken Bow, Scribner, Fremont, and two of the big-time West Omaha parishes, and then one stint of 5 years at Holy Family in North Omaha, he asked to come back home. His last stop, end of the line, ball game's over. Stick those matches and lighters in the air and everyone weave back and forth and hum Freebird. Father Ralph didn't have to do much in Mount Liberty along the lines of saving the world, but he was listening on TV about Wisconsin when they had their little revolution a while back, and he had also watched on TV the news about the revolutions in Egypt, Libya. He tries to keep up on Syria and Iran and Palestine in between runs to the nursing home for the Rosary and the Knights of Columbus Bingo for the Fatherland every first Tuesday. And he got one of those massive emails from some group that he might have sent money to one time. It said, "Let's change America on Saturday." Right. Millions missed their yoga lessons to march in the streets of Washington, and still they bomb Iraq. Americans and others held for years without charges because of the Patriot Act, and everybody yawns. Abraham Bolden, Secret Service agent, put into a mental hospital for years because he sought to tell the truth about the Kennedy assassination. Barry Jennings disappeared because he told the truth about the Building 7 demolition on 9/11. But still, maybe a guy never knows, I guess, is what he thought. And he found the yellow pad in the middle drawer, and he thought he might just see what might come out if he prepared a homily ahead of time, one last time. He wrote on his yellow legal pad, "Wisconsin, we're all cheeseheads now." Ralph crossed it out and out and out, and while he was crossing, he was thinking. He slid his rolling chair to his desk and tugged hard on the middle drawer, raked through the vanilla folders, and found the old homily he wanted to give again that Sunday. Maybe now was the time. The altar area smelled of the branches of evergreen curled around the toes of St. Joseph and Mary on either side of the altar that nobody took down from last Christmas or the Christmas before.
Well, anywho, there was this child, I recall, back 100 years ago, the past century, 1963. This young boy was standing at the green table, still gripping his Flintstones lunchbox. The morning kids had just left. The brand new shiny metal box held his banana and his beads for the Christmas tree. On the blackboard, which covered the whole one side of the room, big as a bus, the teacher engraved in new white chalk, "President John F. Kennedy." Soon all the children were gathered for the afternoon session. They stood beside their tables for the Pledge of Allegiance, and just as they finished, the principal, Sister Mary, came in, and she talked to Sister George. The kids remained standing. As Sister Mary told the children that President Kennedy had been shot and killed. The boy felt a warm stream down his legs as his socks became wet, puddle formed between his feet. Well, now, a bit later, years, decades, generations later, a boy was researching the Kennedy assassination. He found a tape recording of attorney Jim Garrison being interviewed by Johnny Carson on the Tonight Show. They were talking about the shooting of President Kennedy. The man felt an affinity for Mr. Carson because his family had long watched the famous man of late-night talk television. He recalled the hot summer nights with the windows open to let some air through, the faint breath just stirring the curtains. He recalled walking down the alley to the neighborhood grocery store, which was air-conditioned, and stepping into the dark, cool store with the wooden slat floor and the hum of the frozen food machines and the smell of baseball card bubblegum and popsicles.
But he also felt an aversion because he now realized that while Mr. Carson talked on television and the boy's parents sat on the sofa and watched with the blue light reflecting off their faces and the kids scooting over on the floor to get close enough to the screen door to think about asking if they could go out again, terrible things were happening. Father Ralph filled his chest with air. He let it out, filled it again, and held it. He moved his hands to the front of the podium and smiled while he looked around at his audience. The homily had once been the boogeyman of his seminary training, and he knew it was only by grace that he was able to stand up there in front of all these good people every week without turning around to run away and join the circus. And the man felt again like a child as he listened to the interview on tiny headphones, just as a child feels when he realizes he has been lied to. He wrote a letter to Johnny Carson. He wrote to the great Carson at an address in California. He wrote,
"Mr. Carson, my parents and I used to watch your show every night before bed. was our routine, as it was for many others. Perhaps I saw your interview with Jim Garrison when it first aired. I did not recall. I must be frank, because I do not feel I will get a second chance to ask you. Why did you treat Mr. Garrison as you did? Which is to say, quite rudely. Almost as if you were accusing him of doing wrong by trying to find the killers of President Kennedy. Were you protecting the real killers of the president? Of course you were. What else can I say but that it is obvious now, with almost 50 years of perspective, the Warren Commission was a supreme joke and Garrison was onto something. Something frightening, to be sure. But why did you have so much allegiance to the plotters and none to your dead president? Are you still afraid? You could do so much good for your country if you would tell the truth, even now. Why not? Who caused you to act as you did on that night? Up until now, thanks in part to you, we've been forced to live in Disneyland since 1963. Everything is unreal. Everything is entertainment and illusion. Please tell me, as I will never know myself, is wealth and power worth the sublimation of the truth? Sincerely, Ralph Brockelman.
Like a newscaster with nothing left to do, Father Ralph arranged his papers on the podium. He listened for the signs of disgust, coughs spreading like a grass fire or the hymn books being pounded closed. Ralph held his pause for a count of 1,005. He let his chin rise. He saw mostly upturned, pleasant faces. He let a drop of sweat sit on his nose. Ralph let his black glasses slip and peeked over the top like a soldier over the rim of a trench. The great Carson could make justice appear, he said, poof, out of nothingness in the palm of his hand. He won't. It, justice, has appeared on occasions in the past because good men went through the fires of hell to make it happen. They fought the bad guys. As the song or saying or something goes, the revolution will not be televised. You can't catch it after work or tape it for later. The revolution is live and it will not happen unless you do something. The last word hummed like trapped angry bees inside the microphone.
Ralph pushed on the middle bar of his glasses. He looked at the back door for the bishop. Out of his peripheral vision, he checked both side doors for the troops that would march him from the altar to the city jail. If we do nothing, if we shake hands after Mass and agree that all is well, we mean that all is well with us. All is well in our home and on our block, and that is all that matters. And then we are the problem. He paused again. When I lived in that nice neighborhood with the soft breeze and the distant call of the train engine, I was certain I was in a good spot. Without ever really sitting down to think about it, I was absolutely sure before my feet hit the floor each morning. That things were in place, everything in alphabetical order, counted and blessed. And I was wrong. And now what this country needs, more than cheap gas or friendly hometown banking, is a democracy movement. We need someone, some skinny, tired, brave soul, some old man on his way home from Safeway some afternoon, willing to sit in Tiananmen Square and say, enough is enough. One person could do something. For lack of one courageous man on the Warren Commission, generations have lived entire lives in a fantasy world of Ferris wheels and mirrors. Kennedy was going to bring us out of Vietnam. Eisenhower, before him, had warned of the influence of the military-industrial complex. Those people who make money from weaponry. And then those forces took Kennedy out as he was making some sort of peace with the Soviet Union as well. And so tens of thousands of young Americans were slaughtered in Vietnam. Thousands of American families have a forever thorn in their side.
And Nixon and Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush were able to continue to make money from war, from death, from a slug of metal formed in a young Iowan's hands in some small-town bullet factory, heating the cool morning air, making its way into the bone and viscera and brain matter and memories of a young man on the other side. Lyndon Johnson did it, didn't he? He wanted to be president so bad he could taste it. Then he saw he was shut out of the Kennedy administration, and before him, he saw four more years of John and eight each of Robert and Ted. He had to shit now or forever hold it. Priest smiled with his slightly buck teeth and wavy hair that made him look for a moment like Bobby Kennedy. We all know that, but nobody has ever actually uttered those words in America. Not the librarian in Mount Liberty, the produce manager at Supermart, the superintendent of the Mount Liberty Public Schools. Responsible people, we assume. He squeezed the wood, smiled, and looked up at the ceiling fans twirling as he recalled the news that had shattered quiet so many years ago. And so I bring up Kennedy, he said, matter-of-factly, as a shoe salesman saying that brown was the going color this year. Well, no, he was not Christ, and he was not resurrected, and he certainly was not a saint. He was a sinner through and through, just like me and just like you. He was a Catholic, yes, but no big deal. Again, anybody can become a Catholic. I bring it up because it is what is on my mind. Many of you do not remember John Kennedy. Many of us remember nothing but. Where do these thoughts of John Kennedy, his brother Robert, and Martin Luther King Jr. come from? All mortal men, but in my mind, heroes, just as Jesus is a hero of mine. And to be a hero of mine, you have to do one thing. Ralph put up his crooked right pointer finger, the finger that had been stomped on. He held it over his head and out toward the congregation. You have to go and get yourself killed. He held the finger in the air until it became the focus of the room. Couples with their arms interlocked on the pew behind the heads of their children stared at the finger. Ralph meant to be pointing straight up toward the ceiling in exclamation when actually his broken finger was more of a comma. You can't score six touchdowns on one night and be my hero. Ralph spoke loudly, pausing, turning this way and that, using all of his homiletics textbook skills.
You cannot have 20-inch biceps and 30-inch waist and be my hero. He stopped an estimated 3 seconds, and patience keep going. You cannot go to work each day and pay your bills and keep your kids in college and your wife happy and play errorless third base for the church softball team and be my hero. He put his hand down as parenthesis. I see these guys who drive their little cars into the lot at the elevator every morning and leave every night. They do this without fail for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, maybe 40 years. They drive in each morning at the same time. They leave at the same time, same route, look the same way before turning. Parked the car in the same spot of work, same place at home. Now to some people, that image is one of supreme heroism, the loyalty, the work ethic, the steady nature of the man going to work each day, earning his daily bread for his family, that they may prosper and live and grow and also maintain their routines. but I am weird. I see it as cowardice. I really do. I know some of you are going to have trouble with that, but that's okay. I see it as immoral, boorish, dull behavior, because you see, during those years that man is going to work, maintaining a certain lifestyle, people around the world are dying from poverty, from war, what have you.
And on some of those days, that man is going to work and coming home while his country is at war, outright bombing people in other countries, and they are dying. And yet he parks in the same spot, goes home at the same time. That is nothing unusual. His parents, wife, children, and friends expect nothing less. But is it the Christian response? Hardly. The old priest paused, shoved the finger again into the air, and turned slowly to the right and then to the left.
He put his hand down and gripped the podium. You have to go and get yourself killed. So Christ, King, and Kennedy, Wellstone, they did not just die, they had to be killed. If I can offer one thing to you this fine morning, my brothers and sisters, it is this. He leaned forward and whispered into the microphone, "Make the sons of bitches kill you." Now, Ralph did not care if they killed him. The bones of his jaw showed like ripples in the water portending a shark below. He made direct eye contact with three people, as he had been taught. Not long enough to... but enough to show he was not afraid. Don't seek to live so damn long that you finally have to be unplugged. Make the bastards come get you. Make their terrible plans hunt you down and kill you full of holes, fill you full of holes, just as they did the Lord Jesus Christ. And take the chance taken by Jesus, the skinny guy with no money, no family, no friends, no career, no papers or books published, with only this one full court desperation shot at the big time. One card to play that might mean you would ever mount to something. Take the chance that God is God. The old priest pushed his papers together, looked up like Walter Cronkite at the end of the newscast, and smiled. And now let us pray.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average.
And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for listening. We hope you'll be back next week, same time, same place. We'd like to thank WorldNewsTrust.com for continuing to host our website. And we'd like to invite each of you to visit our website and take a click over to the crowdfunding site and throw us a little something to help us keep this show going. We really appreciate anything you can do. But most of all, we want you to come back and listen. That's what we're here for. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.